All right. You may remember the actor Henry Winkler from playing Fonzie, probably one of the coolest characters on TV. Well, you probably didn't know that he struggled with dyslexia, and he had some real challenges as an actor and in the workplace. And of course, things are getting different in the workplace. We're much more aware of different challenges that people go through. We're much better able to accommodate them. Believe it or not, we've got a story that relates to one of our past topics, which is robots. We'll also talk about things with ChatGPT moving forward and turbocharging it, and also some ingredients in your food getting banned in California. This is the Stream Leader Report. Let's do a show.
It's the Stream Leader Report live panel. Creators talking to creators. Raw, real, and unscripted. And sometimes they say the quiet part out loud. Here are your hosts, Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand.
Hey, gang, welcome to the Stream Leader Report. I'm Ross Brand. My show is the Stream Leader Report, and I'm joined by my co-host, Rob Greenlee, host of Podcasting Tips with Rob Greenlee, Rebecca Gunter, the host of Business in the Raw, and Claudia Santiago from Viva La Stage. So welcome, everybody. We've got some great topics to talk about today, and we're going to start off with a story that Claudia came up with. Claudia, tell us about what you got.
The Fonz.
Hey.
Wow, yeah, I remember the Fonz and the Happy Days. What a great show that was, hey?
Yeah.
Taking y'all down to memory lane here. Amazing. And, you know, he was such an incredible actor that you would never have known that he's 73 now.
Wow.
Yeah. And he only found out that he had dyslexia when he was 31.
Mm-hmm.
So for much of his career from what I was reading, he was thought of as lazy growing up. And would get chastised for that, and he couldn't read even his lines for the shows. Most of them he's making up because he couldn't read. So I just found the story incredible because, number one, I didn't know he suffered from this. But then, two, we've talked about some things and getting diagnosed in adult years. And so I thought, well, you know, with many creatives, this might be encouraging, you know, if you've struggled in life or you are struggling, you know, and there may be something that could help you, but you can't get the help until there's some kind of diagnosis. Now, the interesting thing too, I found was, and I don't know if you've got it there, Ross, is he's now an author. He's a best-selling author. He's published like 28 books or something. So, and the books are based on him with dyslexia. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to get my hands on some of those books. I don't know if you've got that there. Oh yeah, there he is. So truly inspiring story. There's the picture of the books. Now,
one of the things I thought was fascinating, was hearing that when he went for auditions, because he couldn't read from the page, he would try his best to memorize it. But of course, first time looking at a script isn't easy to memorize it. So he would make it up as he went along. And when they asked him why he wasn't reading, he said, "I'm giving you the essence of the character." That's pretty cool.
Amazing. I know. His book series is called Hank Zipser, The World's Greatest Underachiever, and was based on Winkler's own experience with undiagnosed dyslexia. "At the height of my fame and success, I felt embarrassed, inadequate," he writes. So it's really quite something. And his wife, Stacy, apparently also has a lot of input in the books. And just from knowing him personally, and it's kind of funny some of the stories, I guess, in there as well. But Rob, you didn't you interview him or were part of some kind of interview?
I was part of an interview with Henry down in Los Angeles as part of a podcast that I was involved in for CBS television. So my ex-wife and I did a full day of interviews with a lot of the leading stars from the fall lineup of the CBS television kind of thing. It was basically like a big room where there was a bunch of radio people there, and we were selected to do a podcast from there with all these celebrities. And Mr. Winkler came through, and we did about a 15-minute conversation with him, and I met him and, you know, was able to talk to him before and after the conversation too. And I would say the big thing, and this probably won't be a big surprise to anyone, that really what brought Mr. Winkler to the fame that he has is that he has a very people-centric personality that really is outgoing, very thoughtful. You know, his disability didn't get in the way, in my view, of his ability to connect with other people and be a personality and perform. He is inherently a performer, but his ability to comprehend the written word. I was also diagnosed at a young age as being dyslexic and hyperactive and all that stuff myself. So I can associate with that. It doesn't hold you back from success in life, even though you feel bad about it because the education system kind of punishes kids that are not, like, don't fit in the norm, right, of what they expect the learning process to be for a person. And those people kind of get, you know, looked down upon because they don't learn the same way. But I would say just my own personal experience with Henry Winkler is he's a very intelligent man. And I think that's a common thread across ADHD as well as dyslexic people, is that they're very intelligent people, just at what's happening in their brain. So there was some cause of this, and I'm not 100% sure that we know 100% what that is. I kind of have an inkling of what causes this, but it's very controversial, as you know, Ross may understand what I'm saying, but it's one of those things that you can overcome as you get older, and you can kind of figure out new pathways to learning. And I think it's fantastic that he is taking that experience and writing books to help younger people who may still be going through this for the same reasons that, you know, I had that problem, you know, myself are continuing in the world today. So I think we're seeing increasing amounts of young people coming down with these type of limitations. And that's definitely a challenge for them. But I also think there's not a loss of hope here. I think that those folks that have that disability can kind of rewire their brains as they get older and learn the way that they can learn. And because that's the pathway I had to take.
Wow.
Look at the power of human beings. Yeah. By the way, who just emerged with another skill set. He became an excellent listener and somebody who can kind of exceed expectations by doing something unexpected. And I think that's a superpower.
Yeah, because he just lit up in front of the camera, because we did an audio interview with him on mic, but I also set up a little video camcorder recording of the conversation with him too. And when he was doing the podcast, he'd be speaking to my camera, even though that wasn't the primary purpose that he was there for. He would actually, like, reach out to the camera and, like, talk to the people on video. So he was very natural on camera, but also just spoke in such a personable mm-hmm. way with even on the audio side. So he was just kind of like engaging, very entertaining, very, you know, full of life. And, you know, I'm sure that completely overcame any limitations, but he was frustrated because he wanted to fit in, right?
I'm just holding up my phone here because I'm reading something. He said, I was grounded 97% of my high school career.
Yeah.
He said, I saw the moon through the window. He said, but those early hardships would motivate him to not just succeed, but to appreciate his differences enough to write a book to help educate others. And I think these are so inspiring what he says here. He says, it gave me fight. It gave me understanding that it doesn't matter. There is not one road to get where you want to go. Right. There is your road.
Exactly. That. And that's my point, is that those kids that have those challenges have to learn a new way of learning. And the other people around them have to get used to that. And many of them don't, because they want you to conform to a certain kind of, especially our school system, wants you to conform to a certain type of learning process. And, you know, he just wasn't capable of doing that. Just like I wasn't either.
Rob, when you interviewed him, was he already diagnosed? Did you know about
He this? Was probably, this was back in 2005, if I remember, it was either 2005. Yeah,
I think he was diagnosed at 31, right?
So I'm not sure. Yeah, that so would he be was well probably after he already knew, but then he was just launching a new network television series. And I think he was playing the role of a father in a family. So that's what the topic of this conversation was. It was about that new fall series launch. He was just a very entertaining guy. I feel honored to actually have met him and talked to him and had an understanding of, you know, what is behind that celebrity. And it's what you would think. It's a person that is outgoing, very gregarious and very kind of engaging with people. And I'm sure that the directors that he worked under didn't mind that he was ad-libbing because it probably came across better than they had written. So,
When I was growing up, that show was on reruns constantly. Like, you'd come home from school.
Happy Days, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Happy Days was always on reruns. So for younger people, there's an expression, I think about 20, 25 years ago, I heard it for the first time, called jump the shark, that younger people may hear. And it's when a series or a show or a concept or, you know, a relationship, when it's past, you've run out of ideas, it's not working anymore, it's losing its credibility. And that came from an episode, and the episode was, of course, when Fonzie jumped the shark. And that's the legendary episode where that expression comes from. He's on his water skis or whatever with his leather jacket.
Right.
Jumping over a shark, and that was the moment people said, you know, I think Happy Days is kind of run out of ideas. But anyway, if you've heard the expression jump the shark, they say that about politicians who, you know, had some mojo for a while and then nobody's interested in them anymore. They've jumped the shark. So you'll hear that on the news and on different social situations from time to time.
Rebecca,
I like how you brought that up.
I wanted to ask you, Rebecca, because you were diagnosed in your adult years. What was that like?
Oh, my God. It was the best news ever. Oh,
really?
Such good news. Yeah, because then I understood everything within that context, and I stopped beating myself up for not being neurotypical, for not gelling in, for not fitting in. Where you think, you know, Rob could probably identify with the thought of, you know, this is something I have to fix, or it's a flaw, or it's a personal, you know, sure, Henry Winkler was grounded for 97% of his high school career, or you feel like you're really broken, or you can't get your shit together, or, you know, you're just weird, and you're spending all the time just kind of masking these symptoms. But then when you find out that you're part of a greater community, and people are experiencing this stuff, and things have names, and you can just say, You know, for example, I just really don't like overhead lighting, and I would kind of go into an overhead lighting situation and be like, and then feel like very strange. Well, now I recognize that a lot of autistic people don't like overhead lighting, and that sensory overload is hard to deal with. So now I can just be comfortable and say, oh, that burns my autism, man. I need a lamp.
Yeah.
That just expresses just owning the truth of it. Yeah. It's one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. I truly believe autism runs in families. So I truly believe my dad was autistic and suffered his whole life with these just idiosyncrasies and eccentricities that alienated him from other people and made him a workaholic and not understanding his own sensory issues and all that. And he spent his whole life not knowing. That's like
torment. You know,
I can imagine. It's definitely othering. It's definitely alienating. It definitely makes you wonder, like, if there's something wrong, you know, what's wrong with me and am I broken? And when you get you get some words to go with it in a community you can identify with, this is one of the best things that ever happened to me in my adult life.
Amazing. And then when you were diagnosed, how was it for your business and those around you, those that were close to you? Did they get it or were they kind of like, okay,
Claudia, I have the advantage of being a creative I'm a copywriter. I'm a brand strategist. You know, I have the ability to be a little bit more quirky or off book than if I were an accountant per se. So I wouldn't say people were tremendously surprised. I think the only person I remember actually saying something that was like record scratch was actually you, Ross, because we're talking about how I do positioning. And I was like, it's just an autistic pattern recognition. And you were like, what? Like, there's probably, other than that, I don't know. If people were surprised, then I think the weirdest thing that happens is when you disclose it to either colleagues or to your friends or whatever, and then they tell you you're not. You're not autistic. Okay. All right.
Well, this stuff, you know, impacts millions of people, and a lot of people try to hide it because they think it's going to impact their careers or whatever.
And it does.
Yeah. So here's here's a photograph from the interview that I did with him. I'm actually sitting right next to the person on the right, which is my ex-wife. So
amazing.
That's awesome. You're right, Rob. People do suffer from feeling like they've got a mask or hide it. And if I had a magic wand, it would be to allow people to really see that it's a superpower. I mean, ADHD is a superpower. You're solving problems in a way that no one else is thinking of. So framing it like a superpower, framing it like an advantage.
Yeah.
Oh, man, pattern recognition sure is convenient when you're thinking about marketing. Sure, it's convenient. So,
yeah.
I would celebrate it. That's my wish for the world.
Well, Merry Christmas. when I was growing up, we didn't have, at least I never heard until I was probably in my 20s or 30s, the term introvert and what that meant. And so it was always strange because, like, when I was in college, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all my friends wanted to go out, be social, go to parties, do things. And I would go on Thursday, but then I would want to stay in on Friday, and then I would go again on Saturday maybe. And they didn't understand why I was willing to give up a weekend night. And I just, to me, it was like, as an introvert, okay, if I was out socializing on Thursday, like, I got my fill. Like, I didn't want, if I, like, and being in a fraternity, we would have, like, you know, we'd all go to the football game together. And then we would have, like, a happy hour where, you know, we'd open the house to, like, all these, you know, different groups from campus. And then there'd be, like, I might hit one or two of the three things, but not, like, constantly engaged in everything from the beginning till the end. I would just need a break, and I would need to do something else or some time alone or whatever. And I didn't understand what that was. And it was sort of like, my friends were sort of like, you go into these stages where you're like, you don't want to be around anybody, or we think you don't like being here or whatever. It's like, no, I don't have the same tolerance for, you know, that type of busy, loud, chaotic, you know, like I want my own time. I need to like process what just happened.
Yeah. And did social anxiety hit you if you hit a threshold?
Yeah. Yeah. If I hit a threshold, it became uncomfortable. It's sort of like my mind's trying to like lift itself out of there and like,
you know,
know thyself.
My challenge came where a lot of times if I was out performing and out in public and doing my job, so to speak, I would be slapped on with a label that you're an extrovert, you know, and then sometimes those that were introverts, I hate to say it, but sometimes they would loathe the extrovert, you know what I mean? Now, the thing is, I always got slapped with that label, but I'm not an extrovert. My extrovert comes out when I'm on stage, when I have to do things, when I'm in. But then, actually, usually if I'm on tour or whatever, like, those that really know me, they know I will cave when I get back. I've had enough of people, and I can only handle so much. And I actually work in quiet most of my time. So I'm what they, you know, I had a mentor once say to me, he's an amazing business entrepreneur, and he said, Claudia, you're like right brain, left brain. You have this creative thing, but then you have this innate way of organizing things and So I'm kind of more of an ambivert, and that extrovert comes out only when it needs to. So I mean, my challenge was always, people were always labeling me, and I hated that after a while, because it didn't, like, I listened to that too much, and it didn't let me be who I really am until I really discovered how Claudia is wired and how that comes out in different situations. So anyway, but no, this is all amazing topics, and I was just so intrigued by Henry Winkler and his latter years and how he's just producing books and like, go dude. Yeah.
Let's say a quick hello to some of our friends in the chat. Bruce McKay is here. Juan Santiago. Dr. Stewart is here. And Beauty Bubble mentions that it is episode 25 of the Stream Leader Report, which she says is an achievement in itself. I'm very proud that the Stream Leader Report has remained a consistent voice in these hectic and unusual times. And thank you to Beauty Bubble, of course, for being there all along the way. And our next story, we're going to go back to the robots. Rebecca, tell us what's going on with the robots.
I mean, it's kind of a segue, actually, into talking about differences and disabilities, etc., because I found this really beautiful story on the Tiki Talkie, where I like to spend some time, as you know, about a Japanese inventor who has channeled his robot building dreams for good and created, I wouldn't call them an army of robots, but a cafe in which people who are housebound, maybe they're a caretaker and they can't really leave, they've got someone sick in the house, or they have a physical disability or immobility issues, and they're allowed to participate. Not allowed to, that sounds so patronizing, but they have the vehicle now to participate in work life and some concert life. Would you like to see the media clip, Ross?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hope I'm right here with us.
Today on Asians Changing the World, we have Kentaro Yoshifuji, or Ori for short. And Ori, who kind of looks like a villain because he loves to dress in all black like he's a Sith Lord, is actually the furthest thing from one. You see, Ori here started and runs a cafe that's mostly run by these robots. But unlike the robots that we know mostly from movies that are run by artificial intelligence, these robots, also known as Oriheims, are controlled remotely by humans, mostly of whom are disabled. See, the cafe is called Dawn, which is an acronym for Diverse Avatar Working Network. And there are server avatars, little bar top bartender avatar robots, and even barista robots. And these robots can be fully functional with just the movement of your eyes, so that even if you don't have the mobility of your arms and legs, you are still able to remotely control these avatars and work at Dawn. And spoiler alert, Odie doesn't just own Don Cafe. He's actually the inventor of these avatar robots. You see, his company, Odie Laboratories, has one mission: to eliminate loneliness from the human race. And he has been searching for ways to create a society where people can meet, work, and live like oneself, even if one is bedridden or housebound. You see, Odie couldn't physically attend school between the ages of 10 to 14 years old for medical reasons. And instead of allowing that to become his origin story for his villain arc, he instead decided to spend his time inventing a balancing mechanism for electronic wheelchairs. And fast forward to when Odie becomes an adult, one of his closest friends gets a terminal disease that makes him bedridden, at which point his friend tells him that the biggest pain being bedridden is the fact that he is just so lonely, which reminded Odie of the days that he was housebound when he was sick during school. So he founded Odie Laboratories and invented these Odieheims. And these Odieheims are not just being utilized inside of Don Cafe, but they're actually starting to be used in other industries and in personal life throughout Japan, allowing people who are not only disabled but also housebound to be able to work remotely and take part in life outside of their home. For instance, in 2019, a 6-year-old girl who was born with congenital myopathy, which made it hard for her to be able to move her arms and legs, was able to remotely attend a pop concert and control the robot's arms and movements and reactions from her bed. You see, Odie believes that in a time where people are living longer than ever, that we will all be bedridden at one point, which is true. At some level, most of us are pre-disabled, which essentially means that if we have the privilege of living long enough, we will all encounter some level of disability in our lives. Don Cafe alone employs over 70 pilots, ranging from quadriplegics to caregivers who are homebound and unable to leave freely. So to be able to eat at Don Cafe inside of the diner, you have to make a reservation, and it's a fixed price of just under $30, which includes a dish and a beverage. You can also drink at their bar without a reservation or get coffee drinks from the barista without a reservation. And they have a pretty decent menu ranging from sandwiches to curry to Wagyu Hamburg steaks, kids menus, and even desserts. So if you are in Japan, make sure you go support them.
Optimism.
That is awesome.
Wow. What a turnaround story for humanity.
Right.
Yeah. I love that. A mission to end world loneliness, or however that was worded. That's beautiful.
Really is. It really is.
I guess there might be hope for our Tinder Ross.
Oh my God, girl! No, she didn't.
Hey, I'm still on it.
So I stay home and just send the robot out wherever.
Look, you go out on Thursday night. The robot goes out Friday night.
There you go.
You come back out Saturday night, so you can, you know, get your alone time without missing out.
We'll develop the extrovert Tinder Ross.
All right. Sounds like fun. So California just banned 4 ingredients used in thousands of candies, cereals, and sodas. Rob, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of story around a couple of different areas. But I think that the big takeaway is that government is getting involved in, you know, making a decision and making kind of legislation to limit the use by the food manufacturers of certain type of ingredients, right? So you think about, you know, I think increasingly we're hearing stories about these food companies using ingredients that maybe aren't healthy for us. And as we, you know, continue to trust the food manufacturers, maybe that trust is a little unfounded. So I think it is a positive kind of move here, is to that the government does need to kind of look out for us, because these food manufacturers out there are really in business to make money, right? And they're in business to use ingredients that will keep us buying their product, right? With maybe a little less regard for our human health. So I think that's really, you know, what you could take away from this. My only observation, because they did in this particular legislation it's called the California Food Safety Act into law, is that it would ban titanium dioxide, red dye number 3, potassium bromate, and pyroparabens, which is a kind of a mouthful to say, which I'm not exactly sure what that is. And then bromated vegetable oil, which is kind of interesting because all vegetable oil is actually unhealthy for humans. But that's a whole nother conversation. But it's interesting that this bill has been proposed. And I think that the government and the FDA really needs to be involved in this, which is a little bit surprising that it would take separate legislation by the state of California to start looking at this. I would think this is in the realm of the Food and Drug Administration, right? To look over food ingredients and say, you know, look at the studies and the research to say, maybe these ingredients are unhealthy for humans. Now they may be more profitable to use for the food companies, but somehow we need to look out for human health here too. Because a lot of people will just blindly trust that what they're eating is harmless and not even read the ingredient label. So that's kind of my take from this. I hope we see kind of more of this, but I'm hoping that it will come from the FDA and not necessarily from individual states.
Well, Tony says California never had a thought they didn't codify or legislate, which is absolutely true. And there's a lot of naughty stuff going on in California. However, In this case, I think they got it right. I mean, our food standards and what we tolerate in the U.S. are foods that are banned in Europe, right, and sometimes in Asia and Africa and Latin America and across the world. And we have extremely lax standards on some of the ingredients we allow. And I would think if California bans it, then the rest of the country will benefit, being that California is such a large percentage of the population, it probably isn't worth it to manufacture, you know, differently for California, right, than the rest of the country, I would think, although they managed to manufacture differently for the U.S. versus the rest of the world, or at least versus Europe, which tends to have very, very stringent standards. So this is a good step in the right direction. There's no reason that companies should be able to put in food. There are enough natural ingredients that are harmful, let alone toxic chemicals that, you know, clearly are dangerous. And if they're in there, it's only because it makes the food look more attractive, it makes it cheaper to make, or it makes it, there's something addictive about that substance that makes you want to come back and back and back. There's a reason that it's there, but it's not for the benefit of the consumer.
I also, my little conspiracy theorist goes hog wild thinking about how the money's in the medicine, baby. So if our food makes us sick, it throws us into the healthcare system and brings all that financial extrapolation into play. So I don't know that the food and drug part are two separate entities in this situation. I smell nefariousness afoot more than just cheaper to produce.
Well, that could be. There's no question about that. I mean, but it also was shocking to me. And I think one of the justifications that they used for this legislation is that these particular chemicals that they've identified are linked to cancer causing. But what I've learned is that there's a lot of other ingredients that are cancer causing that weren't on this list. And the biggest one is sugar. It's not necessarily always the cause, but it cancer cells have been, and the studies have shown this, are fueled by glucose. So those that have high levels of glucose in their blood are more likely to have fast-growing cancer cells. It's just one of those things that, you know, I didn't see anything mentioned in here about really probably the number one most dangerous chemical in our foods, and that's granulated sugar. So,
agreed.
Sugar. Go ahead, Rebecca. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, sure is just as egregious as the street drug dealer on the corner, baby.
Yeah.
And it's when you talk about something that makes food addicting, makes you want to eat more, gives you a sensation because we're biologically predetermined or whatever that, you know, something sweet, there's food, you know, like it's sort of the reward center goes off for a second. And so a lot of times when you eat out, you go to restaurants, whatever, such a heavy hand with the sugar because they want you to get that little sugar rush and go, what a great time I had. What great food, you know, and a lot of times it's sugar and salt that they're doing it and, you know, unhealthy fats like vegetable oils and things like that. Yep. And, you know, while there's the danger of over-regulating and over-legislating, it's almost at the point where this is a national emergency or a national crisis, more so than, you know, a lot of the other things that, you know, a government tackles with health and healthcare and whatever, that, you know, maybe we need to regulate what restaurants use and, you know, from things like seed oils to amounts of sugar, to amounts of salt, to, you know, because only if we have a level playing field where everybody has to abide by, and I don't know how you enforce it and all that, but I'm just thinking out loud here that, you know, once a restaurant doesn't have an advantage by, you know, adding too much something that's addictive or that's high inducing, then maybe with a level playing field, everybody has more of an incentive, plus the law behind it, to do the right thing.
Yeah, to kind of read a couple of aspects of the article here is that it's reported that around 12,000 candies, cereals, and sodas would be banned starting in 2027. It's not like this law is going to go into effect very quickly here. It's still like 4 years away. So we're not exactly on the cusp of having big changes happen rapidly here. I think what they're trying to do is give the manufacturers an opportunity to modify their recipes before that date, because if they're included after that date, they will be banned.
So I was just going to add to the pan as we're cooking up right. My stir fry here is, you know, we're in an age right now where we're human. And but what's going to happen when we are genetically modified and these things that we've even been discussing, like the cameras in our tongue? You know, these kinds of things and how, you know, hey, I'm going somewhere with this. So, you know, the government has a say in what goes into foods. You know, how is that going to change? How is all that? I mean, it's going to be a whole different world because it's coming. It's not like it's just like pie in the sky. They're already working on that stuff.
So you got to feed the machine as well as the human.
Right.
Right. And, you know, it's like, okay, here's your diet for all of those that have these implants in, and here's the diet for those that remained human.
Soylent Green.
We'll need kind of like clean energy here for our robots, right? Is that what you're trying to imply here? So we can't burn fossil fuels to create electricity for our robots because that's toxic.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting what controls what goes in foods and
right.
what, and really too. Then later on, you know, if you're genetically modified or you become, you know, Superman or whatever, you know, like who controls all that? Who controls how much you do to yourself?
Well, it's funny once they see the corrosive effect that these ingredients have on the internal computer that they've embedded in our forearm or wherever, then they will be much more interested in banning it because it's bad for commerce. Where it's bad for our health, it's questionable whether it's bad for commerce. But where it's bad for...
It's good for the healthcare industry, Ross.
Exactly, exactly. Hey, we've got new developments with ChatGPT. Anybody want to jump in on this one? Five key updates in GPT-4 Turbo. OpenAI's newest model.
Yeah, it's exciting. It also points to kind of what we've been talking about the evolution of AI and how rapid those improvements and capabilities are going to come at us. You know, I think we're seeing kind of like, you know, X also announced their new AI platform that's coming as well. But I do think that the ChatGPT platform from OpenAI is kind of leading the charge on what's happening here and the capabilities of this tool. And I use this tool, the GPT-4, with the new capability of analyzing images and documents and being able to tap into the web and the internet to create better results is a major step. So, you know, the new knowledge cutoff for the base platform, which used to be September of 2021, has now been updated through April of 2023. So we're getting close. So that was spring of this year. So as you can see, we're rapidly catching up to real time, but some queries will search the web to pull information, like what Bing has been doing for many months now, and combining AI generated results with deeper context coming out of the current information that would be on the web and the internet. So there's also the ability of longer prompts, which means that you can input more textual information into your query of sorts, up to 128,000 tokens of text, of context, which is basically characters, which is quite a bit. And the capability of the output is much more expanded too. So it's called the GPT Turbo capability. And then also being able to analyze images that are taken either real time or photographs or graphics, whatever. And also it has the ability through the DALL-E 3 platform to generate graphics and illustrations. Also same, you know, in the same kind of queries. So you can ask for text output. You can also layer on text on top of the illustrations that it creates. Now it's not going to take like an existing photograph of like one of us and generate any derivative of that image. So it isn't like you can upload a picture of yourself and it will, you know, de-age you 20 years or something like that. It's not going to do that kind of stuff, but it will take that information and it will create a unique version of that. They really are cautioned around that area because they don't want to get involved in copyrighted stuff. So anything that is generated in this new platform is going to be unique. It's going to be different. It's going to be less personalized, but it will be customizable. So you'll be able to tell it that, put these text characters on the image and then give it some instructions around what kind of context visually that you want based on the query. So tell it that you want mountains or a river or trees, or give it some idea of what you want in context, or just upload a bunch of text to it from something, and it will analyze all that text and come up with a visual representation of what it reads in the text. And then also it gives capabilities ultimately for what we see in the coming months of each one of us being able to generate our own personal AI through this platform too. It's going to be called GPTs. It is what they're going to be calling it. So it'll be like each one of us could go in and create a customized version of ChatGPT that will learn about our life and learn what goals that we have, and it will assist us in achieving those goals. And so that's kind of like the next big evolution, I believe, is that the AI is going to be used for personal AIs. So it'd be almost like a personal agent for each one of us in how we live our lives. Now, granted, that requires us to open up our personal data to the AI, right? And give a view into our personal lives. But that also has a positive opportunity too. It has the positive opportunity of being able to assist us in the complex tasks of life. But yet there's a trade-off for that. So I would say that those are the big areas of improvement that we're seeing here, and we're rapidly approaching what has been commonly called the freaky zone of this. So you can today take your phone and you can take photographs of the world around you right into this AI platform, and it will analyze everything around you and make recommendations or interpretations of what you see. So let's say you go to an airport and you come up to a sign that gives you instructions in another language, or it has graphical representations of, let's say, a bathroom or a garbage can or something like that. You can have the AI analyze that image and interpret what that means. So there may be ways that we can use this, or let's say a plant in your house is sick or something like that. You can take a picture of it and the AI will analyze it and will give you recommendations on how to improve that plant. Maybe
you can do that now. That's a thing now.
Yeah, exactly. Through specialized apps. But what we're saying, what we're seeing happen is a lot of these spin-up companies that we've seen, AI companies, are basically just individual features that will come to these bigger language learning model platforms like ChatGPT and BART and was it Grode, I think is the term that Twitter is going to have, that are going to aggregate all these capabilities into one big platform. And so what we're going to see is a lot of these smaller AI startup companies start to lose market share as these bigger platforms incorporate all that capability into one tool that you pay one subscription to. And it's happening somewhat to podcasting too. So, you know, there's a lot of startups that started to offer certain specialized capabilities with AI that are now capable within just your membership subscription to OpenAI and ChatGPT-4 with this upgrade, with this turbo upgrade. You can do all the same things that you would pay an extra $20 a month to go to some smaller startup company to provide you.
Have you heard of Magi? M-A-G-A-I.
No, I haven't. But that's probably an example of what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, it says the world's most powerful AI tools at your fingertips. Let me share the screen real quick, and you can take a look at what this is. But I think this is kind of what you were talking about. Here we go. Okay. So this brings together a whole bunch of different tools. It says the world's most powerful AI tools at your fingertips. And as you scroll down, you can see the best AI chatbots plus powerful tools, multiple AI models, read any web page, get YouTube transcripts, so on and so forth. Do more than just chat with AI, create chat folders, paste the link. Magi knows what's there, easily access your most powerful prompts. If ChatGPT goes down, your history is still accessible. Wow. It has AI personas, save prompts, AI assistant, folders, chat history. And so it not only has ChatGPT, but it includes Claude 2, Palm 2, Llama 2, it's got like image, it's got DALL-E 2, probably now it's got DALL-E 3 or soon, yeah. Midjourney, and you pay a price and you get access
to all, of
to
it
all
in one.
Those wow. those different things.
Right.
What's the price?
That's a tough question because I think there's a monthly price, but Some of the things are still add-ons, but I closed out the window before I could see.
I've got it here. Personal is $9 a month. Then you go to professional, $29 a month. Professional plus, $49 a month. Agency, $79 a month. Agency plus, $99 a month. Enterprise, $149. So it goes up to $49. Quite a bit there.
Yeah, Kim Reynolds had recommended it when I had her on a show. She's specializing right now in AI and marketing. So
amazing.
It's an example of, I think, where things are probably going based on what Rob was saying.
Yeah. Rob, do you think this is the end of the road for life coaches?
I don't know. I think that those soft skills still have value. I'm not sure that the AI models have the ability to really represent human emotion and human trust and human connection at the level that humans can still provide. And I have a hard time thinking that AI will ever be able to achieve that entirely. I think humans trust humans more than humans trust machines. But I do think that those lines are getting closer together as these AI platforms become more human. So I think that's kind of the line here. You know, I think the concept of artificial general intelligence is actually, I think the proper way of looking at that is I think closer to human intelligence. But I don't think that we're quite there yet. I think it's getting there, but I don't know that we're quite there yet. It's going to be interesting to see what, like maybe in 3 or 4 or 5 years, what a AGI robot looks like. And I do think that companies like Tesla are going to build that in, because if you look at the Tesla cars today, the 12.0 version of full self-driving is basically an AI artificial general intelligence platform that's based on vision and sensors, right? So that's the input that it uses to make determinations about the world. And if you think about how humans do that, we do the same thing. We have vision and senses that help us navigate the world and make decisions about the world. That's what this new model that the cars are going to have. And I've been hearing more talk about the Tesla vehicles having integrated AI into the car itself for the driver. So the driver will be monitored by visual cameras as well to determine, you know, are you awake? Are you paying attention? Are you focused? Are you falling asleep? And the car may be able to take over driving if you doze off or something like that.
Are you texting? Are you smoking a joint? Are you trying to eat a cheeseburger with one hand?
Right. Right. At some point, behind you, you know.
Right. And at some point, that car will just start driving for you. And you can start watching YouTube videos in the car while you're driving. So it's, you know, I think that that's kind of the evolution of this.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm going to be binge watching 24 episodes of the Streamleader Report.
How about that? Huh?
That's exactly what's going
to
happen.
Go right to the playlist and binge it all.
Right. You know, I mean, you got that big screen in the car, so there's no reason why you can't just pop up a YouTube video and watch us talk nonsense. So, right.
Regarding life coaches, Beauty Bubble says the humane AI pin wearable may be allowing for a life coach to be accessed more easily for their clients. And she also says a joint and a cheeseburger, my girl. Well, with that, we're just about out of time. Rob, what do you have coming up on your StreamYard show tonight? Podcasting tips with Rob Green.
Well, this same topic. I'm going to have Larry Roberts on with the Red Hat Media folks. He's going to come on. He's built a reputation for having a strong kind of perspective on what's happening with AI too. And so that's going to be the topic of the show. And we're going to take questions. Stuff. It's at 7 p.m. Eastern on the StreamYard channels. So it'll be live. So if you want to join us and interact and ask questions, and we're going to have a complete conversation about all this and how people can take advantage of it, or they can get freaked out by it. So
are you going to raffle off any ducks? That's what.
Well, of course we are. We're going to raffle off some ducks, maybe even a mug. Who knows?
Oh, my God.
I want a duck.
Binge YouTube, not sugar.
what's going great. On in the stone fruit world.
Ah, thank you so much. We're wrapping up a 6-series mini series episode on Stone Fruit Roll Up, in which business coach Jill Moakes is rewilding our entire business. And we've started live streaming our recording sessions for season 2 of Business in the Raw on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock at the Stone Fruit YouTube channel. You can get a fly on the wall perspective as we capture all that beautiful business building to turn it into season 2.
10 a.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, right?
Yes, sir.
Claudia, you lost stage.
Yes. So now Claudia Santiago is developing some new tribute shows, and I'm excited about that. But I've also been in the broadcast studio filming for Expert TV, and where I am sharing nuggets, speaking, but also bringing in some music and you know, we're whooping it up, but also bringing some practical things. So I'm excited for that.
All right. So for Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, and Rob Greenlee, I'm Ross Brand. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for the Stream Leader Report. Catch us again next week, Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Take care, everybody.